To start off, just give me a brief, like, bullet point overview of your previous experience in music and then how the management company started.
Yeah, totally. So Holt and I knew that we wanted to get into music when we were both in college, actually. And right when both of us graduated, we each took separate jobs kind of in different fields of music. So I moved out here to Arizona to work for an event company based in Scottsdale called Steve Levine Entertainment. And I did like marketing, promotions, assistant talent buying, all that fun stuff on the event side. And then Holt worked for a record label called Audiophile based out of Dallas, where he was more or less doing the same thing on the record label side that I was doing, like entry level stuff on the label side as I was doing entry level stuff on the event side. And then, yeah, we both kind of just like hit our respective walls or ceilings, I guess, if you will, and decided that we wanted to take the jump and do our own thing. And, you know, having experience in events and him having experience on the label side of things, we kind of always knew that artist management was something that really intrigued both of us, and having that like well-rounded experience kind of led us into that. So,
and you guys knew each other like met in college or knew each other before that?
Now, back in sixth grade.
Yeah,
we've been a long time ago.
We've been buddies for a while.
That's cool for sure. Why do you think management kind of aligned those two, like two different sides of what you were working on?
Honestly, I think the easiest way to put it was when I was working on the record label side, like right before, you know, kind of like Parker touched on with hitting the respective like ceiling within what we did, it got to this point where it was super obvious to me, because, you know, the record label side of things tends to be a churn and burn type scenario for a lot of people. A lot of record labels coming out with releases on a weekly or not bi-weekly basis. You kind of see the artist, you put it out on your promo schedule, you know, you distribute the music, and then next thing you know, you're kind of like, well, they're off to the next one, you know, just like on to the next one. And for me, it was really like, hey, it's really difficult to have any hand in these artists' careers whatsoever when you're just kind of in this mentality of on to the next one. And saw an opportunity for what seemed like, you know, at the moment, kind of like a second explosion in the EDM scene at large. But for us, it was really, and where we had passion was house and techno. But, you know, more or less hitting that ceiling, not seeing the ability to work with artists, having a passion for working with artists and really being able to see them do the best they could. It just like got to this point where, you know, we started talking and, you know, more and more started hitting them up. And then it finally got to the point where, as I'm leaving, we're talking about like starting a management company, and both saw the idea of growing talent as mm-hmm. where our passion actually led. I think it was working with talented people and helping them see their dreams.
Also with being a manager, like it's one of the few jobs within the music business where you kind of need to know a little bit of everything, you know, not to like downplay any other job position in the music business. They're all equally challenging. But you need to be able to kind of have knowledge in every single area to, you know, be able to successfully. Yeah, you have to be able to wear multiple hats. And so it kind of helped that, you know, I had my couple years of experience on the event side, marketing, and so on and so forth. And Holt, you know, had the exact same knowledge set on the, you know, record label side. So we just kind of put our hats together and dove right in.
Nice. Yeah. And that leads me nicely to the next question, which is, you know, what do you think the role of a manager is in any, in the career of any artist, you know? And it kind of, I kind of already had the impression of what you were saying, where it's like, you have to know all of these stuff because artists touch all of those different aspects, you know, yeah. Like, that's what drive, you know, they're the ones who make the music. It's called the fucking music industry, right? And yeah. So they're the ones who have to like be involved in all that. But I'd love to hear the way that you guys explain it, yeah. Of just like what your role is in the careers of your clients.
Yeah, I mean, Parker put it really well with like, you got to wear all the hats. But I would say the one thing that we like always come back to, because I would say like we have like totems or themes of kind of like how we do business and like what our like mantra is and like way of doing things. And one thing that like we always come back to is at the end of the day, your job is not to be the artist or decide things for the artist. Your biggest job as a manager ultimately is be a catalyst for what the artist wants to achieve. And I think like at the end of the day, if you're working with somebody, you're working with somebody because you inherently believe in what they're doing. You believe in their vision, their message, whatever they're like spreading, and like down to the music and the brand, everything. And so at the end of the day, it's not really your job to like change somebody or correct somebody. If they want to change and correct things, like by all means, it's your, but it's really the job of the manager to ultimately be a catalyst of doing whatever that artist wants to achieve. Because, you know, it's like, it's their vision, but like yeah. You can create a vision together over time through having actual building blocks that take you to that place. But I would really say it's like, it's ultimately it's being a catalyst for what your artist wants to achieve.
Yeah.
Because like you should have the connections, you should have the resources, or if you don't, you should go out of your way to build those things.
Yeah. So. Hit that on the head. The only thing I would add to kind of like sum that up is it's like if an artist is, you know, if you can view an artist as like a business, like its own, you know, company, if the artist is the CEO, then, you know, a manager is like the COO, you know, because we're helping set all the operations up and making sure yeah. everything is, you know,
some artists since it's kind of filling every single void yeah. that they need, but
yeah, yeah. exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, in some instances you have to be the COO, the CFO, the CMO, you know, you have to, and I mean, to be fair, it really is all of that, but I think like operations really is kind of a good like way to sum it up, because we're, you know, we're here to make sure that all of our artists' careers are running as smoothly and as efficiently as possible. Yeah. And that sometimes means wearing multiple hats.
Yeah. So they can get to that place of it being all about the music.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, so. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, and that's an interesting point that you bring up. And so I'm wondering, you know, your job is to change them. Right. But there's also this kind of certain know-how that you have that maybe they don't have as much of because they're focused on the music. And yeah. So I'm wondering, is there like a scenario where like you like push back and you're like, no, this is not something you should do. You should defer to our experience, you know, that kind of thing. Cause like, so it's not like making the decision for them, but like you just kind of know how to handle something that they haven't handled before. Like
yeah,
what's a scenario
very,
like that?
It's a very case by case situation with that. I would say the other, you know, really important skill set, I guess, as a manager is just being able to communicate well. And a lot of that is knowing when to, you know, back off, when to put your foot on the gas. And kind of like yeah. you said, in that scenario, you know, if it's something that we feel an artist feels very, very strongly about, and we disagree, then we have to figure out a way to communicate that effectively, or, you know, vice versa. It's really just about being able to kind of like share that vision and be on the same page and be able to kind of communicate to get to the end result that you ultimately yeah. want to get.
Yeah. You're a catalyst, but you're not a yes man.
Yeah, exactly. That's the yeah. last thing that you want.
It's like, hey, I'm here to help you achieve any goal and any vision that we can align on and agree is like the most important thing, but I'm not just here just to say everything you want to hear.
And you would hope that, you know, I mean, it's so relationship based too, because you know, you have to have that trust between each other. And yeah. we'd like to think that all of our artists trust us enough to ask for our opinion. And if we disagree on something and we explain why, we would like to hope that they will be open-minded to hearing that out. And again, having an open discussion, as opposed to, you know, like Holt said, us just being yes men and saying, yeah, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, if we strongly agree against or disagree against something, then we have to yeah. let that be known.
It's just that piece of like, I guess the catalyst factor, and is really, at least for us, it's like, hey, there's a reason we work with the people we work with.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason we've like chosen the people like we choose to work with, is because like we're as much fans of theirs as we are like actual managers
yep.
of theirs. And I think that builds into a lot of the reason that our visions end up aligning, is because like, hey, we see it very much the way you're seeing what you're doing. Let's just like create something that actually, you know, has revenue, like multiple revenue streams, can bring in multiple opportunities
yeah, for not only you, but
everybody else. Exactly. So
yeah, I definitely appreciate that though, the whole communication side of things. I mean, you talk about wearing all the different hats in the music industry. I feel like the one hat that connects them all is being able to communicate well, for what's sure.
Whenever strangers ask me like what I do, you know, for a living, or
this is actually a fact.
It's such a funny like thing to describe to people, like when you're making small talk, because like, you know, a normal person or whatever can just be like, oh yeah, I work in finance, or I'm an accountant, or you know, whatever. And then you're like, oh, I'm an artist manager, like work in the music business. And they're like, what? Like what does that really mean? They're like, what does that mean? Yeah. They're like, so what do you do? Yeah. And it's my least favorite question to answer to somebody that like doesn't have any like, you know, preconceived like knowledge on the music business. And I basically just kind of boil it down and say, essentially, I just talk all day long. Yeah. I talk to people 24/7, whether it's our artists or Holt or our agents or promoters. Yeah, I'm just talking.
Yeah. Or it's just generating opportunities.
Yeah.
Saying no or saying
exactly.
Yes.
It's just constant communication.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the best artist managers truly do, like, they're always available.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is probably part of the reason why I even like brought up like the vacation thing. It feels like it's 5 years of constant communication. But it's like, that's really what it is at the end of the day. It's like, you're the ultimate middleman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You are where people come to look for like answers for on the artist side, or like, hey, I have this thing for your artist. I need an answer. Hey, this is an opportunity you've already said yes to. I have an answer. Or on the flip side, it's your artist coming to you and saying, hey, I need this opportunity, or it's you vetting an opportunity on their behalf. But mm-hmm. it really is just constantly being in that middleman spot of communication. Like, we liken it very much to like a GM role.
Yeah.
And
that's
like
another sports, good,
you know,
analogy.
It's very yeah. similar to that in the standpoint where it's like, hey, you're maybe not on the floor doing the coaching. You're not on the floor doing like the playing, like, you know, your biggest artists are like your players on a court, but like, it has a very GM-esque role to it, where a lot of it's in the background, but you're ultimately creating a lot of opportunities. You're vetting a lot of opportunities, but you're doing it from this very like middleman position.
Nice. And so to keep it on analogy, so if you guys are, you know, the GMs, the client list is the team. What do you look for when signing a new player, aka a new artist?
Yeah, that's.
I would say question. Like current day, it's well-roundedness. It's like, it's not just like, you know, it's music first. At the end of the day, it's like, hey, we, like I mentioned at the beginning, it's like we have to be fans of people. But like, ultimately, what we've recognized is that like 2022 and now going on 2023 presents a shit ton of problems. It's a shit ton of things that you have to like do well in order to stand out. And like, ultimately, it's, we're not just looking for somebody who can like do one thing.
Yeah.
Like this isn't the time of being able just to make music. I'm sure a lot of people wish it was, but like, it takes being well-rounded. Like,
yeah. Gone are the days where you can just, you know, put really, really good records out and kind of hope that you break into the right crowd, and then just kind of sit there and keep making good records and sit, you know, behind your screen doing that and nothing else. You have to really be able to market yourself as a person nowadays, as well as being able to market your music. So yeah. Like Holt said, music always comes first, because there's really no point in marketing yourself as an artist if the music isn't right and it's not there and isn't connecting to a fan base. But once that music is connecting, then for them to really be able to connect to you, they have to know who you are. You know what I mean? And it's really important in today's landscape. It's annoying. I get it. Like, oh, a lot of artists, this, especially some of the older ones that have kind of like been through the big EDM, you know, bubble burst and into, you know, the social media land today that we live in. A lot of them are like, oh, like, why can't we just go back to like the days where all that mattered was the music? And it's like, well, I don't disagree. Those were some awesome days, but like, you either adapt or you die. You know what I mean? You have to figure out a way to kind of move with the times. And that's just how it is today. People want to relate to something more than just a song that they're hearing, you know, on a Spotify editorial or that they're hearing on Sirius XM. They want to be able to relate to it.
I mean, I think that's interesting, you know, because people say, you know, this is a bit off topic, you know, people say, oh, like, there were like, the before times when all that mattered was the music, I was like, does that time actually exist? You know, because like I'm thinking back to like the Beatles and stuff, and like the Beatles were super fucking marketable in America.
You know what I mean? It happened differently.
Yeah.
It was just differently.
The way they connect is different.
Yeah. Cause you know, you had magazines and newspaper and all these different like forms of media. And now because it's so accessible, it's so like, it's around the clock. It's like 24/7, which is, I totally get from an artist standpoint, is the annoying aspect of it.
That's like, that's the real difference, just, right?
Yeah. Cause you're like,
it used to be taken in moments.
Yeah.
Like the Beatles were taken in moments. Like, hey, we got this interview here.
Yeah.
Hey, we had this like moment, you getting off the plane here. Hey, we have you doing this here. People in like today's time, they want to know what you're doing when you're sitting
all the time. It's like, if your Instagram's, if your Instagram story doesn't have anything, like you should always have something in your Instagram story. It should constantly be something for people to view 24/7.
Yeah.
Which is annoying. I get that. You know what I mean? Like I try to be like, you know, on top of my social media as well. And sometimes I look down, I'm like, ah, oh, freaking A. Like I don't want
to. And I can get that annoying because I'm not on top of mine at all. But I always say it's like, it's one thing to like sit here and complain about things, but like I, you know, for me, it's like I have no social media, you know, I have some, but like I'm not paying attention to it, but I'm a master of social media.
Yeah,
I'm saying it's like, it doesn't matter if it's applied to me, but like I'd be stupid to sit here and say that it's like
that not it doesn't worth matter.
My time to like care about that. So
yeah,
it's like a good way of putting it, I guess.
Yeah.
And so with all these little things that these artists have to be focusing on in a certain way, I'm wondering, you know, it's just still just the two of you, right? You don't have any like assistants or anything like that?
Yeah, we've got a team now. So that was always like a big thing of ours, is like we're very like the bootstrap guys, like did this just because like we found it fun and fascinating and like it's how we wanted to like grow. But like we have like a team now that's like actually built, and one big part of like what we did was definitely growing the media side. I think over time, like we found how like important obviously like content and constantly being on top of that really is. And so we built out like a media side with what we do, and got to give shout out to like people like Wyatt Mavis, who is our first intern, who also ended up being like
our first hire
and has been such a pivotal piece of like what we've continued to build. But like also like people like Mason Ripple, who was like a day one person that we brought on for like John's project of all things. And like, you know, we've continued to grow with him, as well as like Tyler Rittenhouse, who is like a local grown product here in like Phoenix that we worked with over and over again and worked for Relentless Beats out here a long time. And it's over time, we've been able to build that side of what we've done. And, you know, I think for 2023, that'll be another like focus of ours to continue extending the team. But it's not just an us thing. It's just been an us thing for a long time.
We grew
slow on purpose because of like it's not just for us, like something where it's like a skill thing. A lot of it's like a culture fit, do you, like kind of how we tend to handle things, as well as like how we, you know, like how we just are,
and how we operate.
So how many employees does Metatone have right now, including interns and things like that?
Six. Yeah.
So can you tell me just like very cookie cutter overview of like who does what type thing?
Yeah. So we own it together. I would say it's more of like the overseeing of the management side of things, as well as like new business development and just
the overall
media business. We're going into a lot of other stuff like 2023. We have game plans in other places. I would say a lot more like boring sides of the music industry, but places that we really are like grabbing a footing in that we're excited about. But then we have Wyatt Mathis, who is media coordinator and management coordinator. He's the first person we brought on, like really in any sort of role as an intern, that we brought on like full time, and has been a really pivotal piece to what we've been growing. And I would say is like really in the core group of what we've developed. Mason Ripple, who's head of videography and like media in general. Tyler Rittenhouse, who does like all photography, but like also has a huge say in kind of what we do on the media side. And then Andrew Witcher, who is our intern currently, but honestly is like grown into a larger role out of that. And is somebody that has a really kind of like Swiss Army knife approach about them, who can do stuff on the media side, has a natural background in that. And marketing and advertisement, but like also has a ton of interest in the management side and has been able to kind of like fill in a lot of the nitty gritty side of things when it comes to the workload. So yeah, I mean, it's been growing. We think slowly. A lot of people think, like, I'm sure it's been like fast because we went from 2 to 6 and, you know, like a year and a half or 2 years, but for us, it felt extremely slow.
Yeah.
At least I would say. So yeah, it's kind of like our basic landscape at this point.
Nice. And did the number of employees naturally increase with the number of clients, or, you know, how did the two like overlap? Was it just
not
like
at all, actually, because we like, you know, again, we've grown slow in the sense that we've been very picky about, you know, who we want to work with. Really, it's the amount of people that have joined the team, not even just like from a standpoint of like Metatone as a company, but also each individual artist team. Cause like, for example, I mean, there's like a whole slew of people on just Team John Summit. You know, he has his own, his own lighting director now. He has his own VJ. You know, he's got a guy audio, that runs lasers, audio, like the whole shebang.
Tour manager.
He's got, you know, a ton.
Hold on.
Really, what it's grown not with the number of clients, but really just the amount of workload. Because as each of our guys has grown, you know, like for example, when John was just playing club shows to, you know, 400 or 500, 600 people, didn't really need a lighting director, you know, a VJ, tour manager, assistant tour manager, laser guy, like all of these things. But then when you go and you sell out the Shrine and you have, you know, a production
bundle,
two nights, exactly. Thank you for mentioning that. And then you have a production budget to work with, and you essentially get to curate and throw the entire event. You know what I mean? You have to, there's a lot of pieces that fall outside of our skill set. You know what I mean?
That turns into every other show. Yeah. So,
but then that comes back to what we were saying earlier, nice little full circle moment here, where like, it's our job to make sure we're putting the right pieces in place, and, you know, the operations of everything, or, you know, go back to the GM analogy. It's like, we have to make sure that everybody kind of fits in with our culture as well as can get the job done and get to that end result that we're all looking for.
Yeah. It's being able to pick all that around, but yeah, it's, I mean, just keeping it short after Parker, it's like, it really has not changed based on the amount of artists we work with. It's changed based on what they've been able to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I think like we grow slow on the artist side too. Like we've had the same amount of artists for quite some time now. But that's because there's the thing we're committed to is like, it's growing the talent we work with. It's not bringing on more talent.
It's always like, been quality over quantity.
We will eventually get to the point where we're bringing on more talent, but like our main focus is how do we take an artist where they are now and 8X what they're doing? Like how do we reach these goals and these milestones that they're laying out on the table?
Mm-hmm.
And one way we definitely know that doesn't solve that is by adding more into what you're trying to do workload wise. It's like, no, let's build the quality of what we're doing to a higher level and like achieve these dreams that these people are coming on and like saying that they want to do it with you. Like that's far more important to us than just adding people for the sake of adding people. So yeah, I would say it's really expanded a lot more just based on like what we've been able to accomplish with each project, not really just based on who we've brought on.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting because it's another question I had kind of about the different like scopes of the careers, at least for now. And I'm going to use like an analogy or whatever that you guys mentioned. Like, how does the talking part like change when it's John Summit now does Red Rocks and is doing, you know, that's what I forgot, Mission Ballroom now the night after too? And well, then versus
first thing the night before.
Yeah. And then now it's like someone like Ranger, who it's maybe it's just like, okay, we need to work on getting Ranger on these festivals. So John can play all the festivals in the world now. Now, like, what do we need to work on? So just like, how do those conversations change as, I guess, the scope expands in a way?
I would say, so it's funny because there's a part of me that wants to say it actually doesn't change at all.
Mm.
Because one of the ways that we like to communicate with, you know, each of our artists, and we honestly have done this since day one, is by like reverse engineering. And it's actually something that our agents do a lot of as well when they're kind of strategizing, you know, how to like break in certain markets and, you know, just long-term planning on the touring side of things. But what I mean by that is you kind of figure out where it is that you want to go mentally, and then you work your way backwards and kind of reverse engineer on what needs to be done to get to that point. So obviously we're having different conversations with John than we are with Ranger or Kyle or whatever, but it's not for the sake of, you know, because we think that they're not as, you know, or don't have the same potential or whatever.
It's just that point in the phase of what we're building.
Exactly. And really you always kind of have to think and act like you're a couple steps ahead of where you actually are, because if you act as if you're, you know, just a small up and coming artist, then you're going to kind of always stay up and coming artist. You want to break out of that mold. And in order to do that, you kind of have to, you know, put your sights on where you want to be. And then, again, you kind of reverse engineer on what you need to do to get there.
Yeah. And I would say the only way it changes at all is probably just we grow as managers.
Yeah.
Like over time, we become, you know, I don't want to say smarter or not, like maybe just blowing smoke up
our asses. Experience, though.
You gain experience. And like at a certain point, you say to yourself, like, as well as the people you work with, it's like, hey, I'm getting better at this. You're getting better. Like, if I'm getting better at this, then I should give better advice a year from now than I was giving a year past. Like yeah. So it's, you know, it's an understanding of like everybody you work with, we're all growing and improving together. Yeah. We're all willing to admit those things. And I think through that, you understand that like the next people you work with that are following behind that person are probably going to get slightly more sound advice because they're getting advice of a more experienced person who's been through a lot of these like hurdles and been through a lot of these things and understands what they're trying to achieve a bit more. So I think they can give, you know, advice from just like a higher,
a
wiser standpoint. Yeah. But I think in terms of like what Parker really like said perfectly was that ultimately your approach does not change. Yeah. Like the way that you like look at what you're trying to do, you always go, hey, this is where we're trying to get. Let's establish like a point of where we're trying to get to. And then let's work backwards from there. Like your approach never changes. It just, the place you're coming, like the mentality you're coming at it with might change based on your level of experience, but that's what you would hope. Like everybody that you're working with would hope that you're constantly growing and, you know, becoming more experienced by the day. So,
yeah, absolutely. I definitely appreciate that mentality, you know, 'cause it's like, if you're like focused on where you are, you're trying to like catch up to where you are. But if you're focused on where you're moving, then you're moving forward. You know, if you're acting like you're like you focusing just on right now, of course it's important to be in the moment, but you know, like you're only gonna be in that zone forever.
You have to be humble about where you are, but then you also, you know, what's the phrase, like shoot for the moon, if you fall short you land in the stars. Yeah. It's kind of like it's a similar mentality, you know what I mean? Yeah. if you act the way you've always acted, then you're gonna be where you've always been.
And you also mentioned you've noticed like the growth as your own growth as managers, and I'd just be interested, is there like a moment that you guys can point to where you're just like, shit, I'm so much better at this than I used to be? Like, and it's not even about humility at that point, it's just being honest, you know what I mean?
I mean to be fair, to be transparent, probably like 6 to 8 months ago, yeah. I think it was probably the first time. It wasn't even things slowed down. It was just the first time that like we actually maybe got a chance to like chat together, like just him and I without having anything to do and just like had an opportunity to just dive into. And I would say that we're like essentially got thrown into the fire, but like at the end of the like day, it wasn't that we came out burned. It's just that like we came out understanding it's like, hey, like, you know, you want to do this at the biggest level. Like there are God knows how many things that you have to learn along the way that you will not understand or have the opportunity to understand until you're actually facing them.
Yeah.
So like it's becoming comfortable with expecting the unexpected and being okay with the fact that like, be willing to ask questions, be willing to learn on the fly, be willing to know that you're going to get better the next time, even if you don't understand it right away. But I would say that at the end of probably like a year of touring at like an extremely high paced level and working with artists that are trying to achieve bigger and better things every single day for like, and it, a year to a year and a half after the pandemic, I would say that was like the first time we looked at each other and it's like, we could pretty confidently say that like we've gone through each of like pretty much everything you could face in about 10 years we faced in like a year.
We've had a handful.
Even our agents and like labels have like commented on that, like essentially just you've experienced everything you could. Like most people have, they work with artists that, you know, it'll take 10 to 15 to 20 years to experience some of these things
that we've
experienced in like each month is outpacing the next month in a way that just like doesn't even really seem
possible. The thing about that too is it's funny because that's kind of like all we know right now is like that level of growth. So there's been a handful of conversations that Holt and I have had over the last year or so where we've kind of just like taken a second to just be like, holy shit, like I can't believe like this and that happened, and we haven't even really had a conversation about it. They've just been happening and we've had to deal with them as they've come up, and
not enough time to even talk
And I'm not necessarily only talking about like, you know, like fires that we've had to put out, but also like really big achievements where we haven't even like acknowledged that we hit them because we were just so like on to the next thing. And then when we, you know, a month or two goes by and the dust settles, and then we're just like, holy shit, like that actually just happened, you know. I will say, I do want to answer your question just because it was, I have like a slightly separate moment, and it was at EDC last year. And it was just a very specific moment for me, at least. We had John playing the Circuit Grounds, and we had Deeper Purpose playing Stereo Bloom, and they were like not necessarily close to each other, like within the racetrack, but their sets were like perfectly staggered. Like John was going on right as Deeper Purpose's set,
like
was
right as he was going on.
So we had to like divide and conquer. So like I was with Wyatt and Holt, and we were at Deeper Purpose's set, and Holt was with Mason and a couple other people, and I think we also had Tyler with us, who was shooting Deeper Purpose, and Mason was shooting John, and we just had to divide and conquer. But essentially what happened was I left like 15 to 20 minutes before Deeper Purpose's set finished, and literally had to like sprint to John's set, and I was like in the middle of running, and I was like sweating and like saying excuse me to people, and it was like in that like jog going through EDC where I was like, oh my god, it's like this is crazy right now, because Holt and I in 2013 went to our first EDC, and that's actually where we decided that we wanted to work in the music business. And I just like had this weird out of body moment running to John's set, being like, oh my god, like I was literally like in this same crowd, you know, like 9 years ago, just like a clueless college kid partying, didn't know what the hell I was doing, and now I'm like sprinting between two of my artist sets, and they're, you know, absolutely crushing it. So I just remember it so distinctly, having like a weird out of body moment, being like, wow, this is crazy right now.
You're probably running like the same trajectory in 2013, just for a very different reason.
100%.
That was a moment of just being like, I can't believe. Also just like being there on the stage too when he walked up, because it was like one of those moments where, you know, it's prime time set, you're looking out and everything, and it was one of those moments where I think we probably stood way out in the crowd,
like
120 rows deep, whatever it happens to be, looking at that same thing, and had that exact same thought of like, hey, this is exactly what we want to be doing, is like being in this moment and being like big pivotal part of like what makes this happen. And then
8 years later,
and then also being on the exact flip side where we there. And then like him running up, and I like remember like laughing about that whole moment. But yeah, it's just like moments like that. It's like few times you actually get to like reflect back on it and actually be like, oh shit, this is,
we're doing the damn thing,
really occurring, as opposed to just having to like figure it out.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Can you give me like a brief timeline of like which clients you've had, since the beginning, like to now, and like when they were signed, just like really like brief.
Yeah. So John and Kyle, as far as our current roster goes, they're the oldest right now. We signed Kyle, I think, what was it? Was it the beginning?
This would have been end of 2018, beginning of 2019.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess John was John the beginning of 2019 or the end of 2018? I don't know the exact timeline, but I know they were like a couple months apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then who came after that? So then we had Freak On. We signed at the beginning of 2021, actually, which was terrible timing because like 2 months later the entire world shut down.
2020, right?
Oh yeah, sorry, 2020. Sorry, 2020.
Purpose and Ranger were both within the last year and a half. Yep. It was funny, Ranger actually brought up that we started working together a year ago.
Oh, yeah,
I think an actual month ago.
Yeah, we like just had our anniversary with them.
Yeah. But I mean, that's one thing that a lot of people, you know, always I guess like shed light on or point out is that every artist we work with is we've came on at like a very early stage in their career and like work on building everything about what they are. A lot of that is one, I think it's like, we always tell like we were kind of the youth within management, like the new guys on the block that were just like trying to like do it their way and wanted to work with artists that were doing it their way. But I think it's also in combination. It's like, we love like the ability to work with people that don't have an identity yet.
Yeah.
Like that their identity becomes whatever people feel as it's growing. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like predetermined and a thing we've done. Obviously a lot about like what's happens on that side has changed a ton over time because, you know, we're not like set in our ways, but I think that's one thing that's like a constant between every artist that we currently work with is like, these are people that we've worked with since pretty much day one.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that does matter to us a lot. I think that's a huge reason and why, you know, we also have like a huge connection with every person we work with is because we love that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like we love building things from start to, I wouldn't even say finish because finish is putting a level on it, but we love working with people that have huge, huge goals and maybe don't have it all figured out, but have all the pieces. Which is why I think it's like we liken it a lot back to like sports, which is where both of our backgrounds is in any way, like him with tennis and me with basketball, even playing like all the way to college. But it's like, it's always kind of like the way we've looked at things is like, give us the pieces and like, give us the vision. And like, that's what our main emphasis is like working with people who have the pieces. So that's the commonality between everybody we work with currently is just like, it's people we've worked with from a very early stage.
Mm-hmm.
So say someone who wasn't starting out approached you, maybe someone you're a big fan of. I mean, can't really think of an example, but just someone who's already established, would you turn them down based on the fact that, you know?
No, not necessarily.
I think it's more that we would never turn things down based on that being the premise at all. We're open to everything. I think more so what it is, like that's what, one, I think is actually like made what we've done attractive to other people is because they know they're like, hey, I know that these people are like a huge part of what their artists are doing. They're not just like coming in for the ride and like just coasting and hoping that
we've been there since day one.
But I would also say it's like, it's a big reason for why we've expanded slowly because like there is all that groundwork and we're definitely not turned off to it whatsoever. And it's something that I think longer term will be something we're much more interested in.
Totally.
But it's just something up to this point that I think is really, that's what's like fostered the culture that we have.
Yeah.
Like, is like, hey, we're going to be better tomorrow than we are like today.
And also like
Holt, that's what we just constantly.
And like Holt said earlier too, like we're just like obsessed with growing what we currently have and getting these guys to, you know,
we don't want to just be a part of it. Like we're not just here to like hang out and like drink your writer. We're here.
Which is what I think a lot of people think we do. Which don't get it twisted. We do that as well.
Oh, we
do that as well. But but we will come home from the afters at 9 a.m. on Monday morning, checking our email on our phone.
And be the psychos getting called out for like, exactly. Are you guys seriously checking your emails right now?
At the afters? Like, yeah, we are, because we got shit to do.
We have stuff
we got shit to do.
So that's, I mean, yeah.
I'd rather be looked at a psycho for doing that.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. To be fair. There's a lot worse things that we could be psychopaths about. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously super admirable to take part in like an artist's career. I mean, I feel like it's more common these days in like the modern phase of dance music with how like DIY it can be, you know, versus like, you know, some of these. I mean, The Weeknd probably has like four managers like overall, from his like main guy to his like three day to days and like that kind of thing, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. No, there's definitely a big do it yourself aspect.
Yeah.
These days, but it's just been fun. That's the other aspect of it, man. It's just, it's enjoyable to like take a project from nothing to something, and then from something to like, holy shit, like look how many tickets we just sold, you know. It's like there's levels to this, and it's the whole like journey of it has just been very, very enjoyable and equally challenging.
Speaking of challenges, one thing that may be challenging that I would perceive as would be challenging at least a little is, you know, now John Summit's at the point where he can draw backlash for some of the things he tweets or some of the things he says. And, you know, I bet that's the way he tweets now about Benders and stuff is exactly the same things he was saying when you first signed him. That would be my guess. But no, now he's at that level where he is such a like large presence that, just like anybody who has that kind of presence, people are going to take issue with what he says.
Yeah.
And so like when that kind of stuff happens, I'm just like wondering like, how does like, what is the manager's role in like addressing that kind of thing?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, like a big part of not only his project, but all of our guys' projects. And what I think any successful act nowadays is like authenticity and just being who they are. It's kind of what I was saying earlier with like, you can't just put a record out and expect it. A record can be successful, but that doesn't always mean the artist behind it is going to go sell a bunch of tickets. You know what I mean? There's layers to this, and John has always been who he is, and he's going to continue being who he is. But yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, PR scares or just like getting backlash for saying certain things, we've kind of just always had the same mentality about it, which is, as long as you're like being true to yourself and you can look yourself in the mirror and we can all look at each other at the end of the day and like, you know, be happy with what's going on. Obviously on like, especially on Twitter, a lot of stuff is just smoke and mirrors and jokes and just like stupid, funny shit that people take way too seriously. But at the end of the day, as long as like nothing is actually being harmed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then we're okay with, you know, how everything plays out.
Yeah. We're fine with ruffling feathers, but like,
yeah,
ultimately it's like the main reason that we don't worry is because we work with people that
we work with good people.
We would hang out with.
Exactly.
That like we enjoy, that we know who they are and we know like how they feel about things and we know, you know, how they're going to represent themselves and we know how they think about like what they're trying to accomplish. And at the end of the day, it's like, we like our favorite people growing up were rappers. Like half of the inspiration we got in music was just people like being themselves and talking their mind and saying things that are abrasive and ruffling feathers. And like, that's never been a problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest acts that have ever been on the planet in music have been rappers and punk rock and rock and
people
roll.
That weren't liked by everyone.
Elvis, who went on stage and was doing his, like, everybody's ruffled feathers upon time. Like you ruffle them in new ways because you have this direct source to your audience in which you can talk to them in a way that's never been seen. I mean, let's see what Elvis would have said
on Twitter. Tupac Shakur
would have said on Twitter.
Exactly.
Like some of these things are like, they're unknowns. And I think it's just like, we're dealing with today is like what we have. But the reason like we ultimately, it's like we work with the people we want to work with, that we have backing on, that we truly believe in, like, and we know are great people. And like ultimately at the end of the day, if we're ruffling feathers, like, so be it.
It's a good thing. And I will say, I will add to that and say that it doesn't mean that we haven't like had to, you know, have conversations on how to diffuse certain things. Because I mean, there've been instances, and I'm not only speaking about John, but where like an artist might've said something meaning it a certain way and it got taken out of context and spun a completely different way, which is the problem with social media nowadays. It's the problem with anything online. I mean, it's the problem with sending a text message. You can't sense there's sarcasm. 101 ways there's so many different ways.
We've learned. I was like, damn, I didn't even think about that.
Exactly.
I thought there were four responses. Exactly. To this.
So we've definitely there's been situations where we've had to like come together as a team, you know, and have a discussion about how to like, you know, how to kind of dissolve things and make sure that the, you know, whatever was said is seen in the right light. It doesn't mean that, you know, everything's going to come off perfectly, but you know, like Holt said, at the end of the day, we're only working with people that we want to hang out, that we would hang out with at the end of the day, and that we do hang out with at the end of the day. And we like to think we're good people, and we have good, you know, judgment of character, and we're not going to hang out with shitty people that have bad intentions. Yeah. So,
and ultimately at the end of the day, anything that's absolutely worth it, like we have conversations.
Exactly. About. Exactly. So, if a tweet is taken the wrong context, is going to be the thing that, you know, set somebody off and they can't come back from it, then, you know, the way we view it is like, that's their own fault. You know what I mean? If they're going to take something out of context and run with it, and that's your problem. You know what I mean? As long as there's no bad intention behind, you know, things that are being said, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, of course there's levels to the shit, and like, just to say, it's like, Kanye is showing everybody the line that crossing the line. Now everybody knows what that looks like. And so it's like, all right.
You know, for setting that line, because now it's very, very clear.
Which also sucks because,
yeah, I know. That's a rough,
Goddamn it, Kanye.
But... I know.
I'm right there with you guys for sure. It's fucking Wayne. One client that we haven't talked about much on that's on the roster is Jenna, and
Gina.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but she seems outside the more house DJ producer kind of sphere. Yeah. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, with that being a more a different kind of client in that sense, what kind of goals and, you know, things are you catalyzing for her?
So I think the reason we haven't like been crazy vocal on her project, I guess like publicly, is because, well, obviously she does fit outside of the normal producer / DJ, you know, act that we usually work with, but also because she definitely comes from a different background and has had like a much different journey to kind of getting to where she is. And also it's going to be a much different journey to get her where she wants to go, as opposed to a DJ or a producer. Cause as a vocalist, singer / songwriter, you know, you don't just put a couple big records out and then get to go tour the world. You know, you have to be a little bit more calculated and strategic with it, but you know, she is insanely talented. And, you know, we just recently locked some things in for her that I don't know if we can publicly say, we'll keep them on the low, but that, we have some really, really excited about it. Have some very exciting things on the horizon for her. And she's got some really big projects that she's working on. And,
Long story short is the reason that we've kept a lot of things from like being publicly displayed is because we're really excited about kind of what's happening behind closed doors.
Exactly.
There was kind of a reason that it needed to happen in the pace that it did. Yep. But we're extremely excited about 2023.
Yeah, 2023
because
is going to be a big
it's,
year.
Yeah, we've got some new partnerships we're already locked in. We've got game plan and expect to see her a lot more like in the dance and house community, like creating her like foothold while also working on her own career as well.
Yep.
But for us, it's like it hasn't always been like we love all sorts of music. Like him and I are just like music nerds who just like everything. And like it's crazy to say, like coming from Texas, like, you know, we ended up having to listen to country for all like as we were growing up. It's like, no, there's
and that's nothing... the only genre that we don't
Love. Yeah, that's the only genre.
We listen to everything, like, but we don't really listen to country.
We've been through everything, we know like roots of pretty much everything, and like we love everything, and house and techno is like a passion for us. It's like something that's like very like close to home. It's something that like we've always
related to,
been on a crazy level of like just like admiration for people working. It's whatever it's, but it's like we're really excited about Genius Project because of what it holds even outside of that. But I would say that like be very on the lookout for what she's going to be doing inside of it as well. So
awesome. Yeah, I mean, just given the formula and the reputation you guys have, it's got to be good, that's for sure. And then just to close out, you know, on this theme of what's next for the rest of the clients and what's next for you guys in 2023?
So continuing to grow. That's the coolest part is like, kind of like even pushing back to what we said before. It's like the people we work with, like there's a reason we work with them. And like, we're like the things we're building with each of them are so in tune with what those people are trying to accomplish. And that's why we're so stoked to continue building them. So I'd say it's continued growth of them. It's, we have a lot of things we're doing just as a company that like, you know, have our focuses outside of just kind of like the management game that are probably going to be things that will never be seen from a public front, but are going to be things we're going to be working in on the background that are really important to us and continue to grow what our company does and what it can bring to the table. But I would also say it's continuing to grow in media. But also it's more of a, like we're trying to push boundaries, like whether it's from John's project all the way down. It's like, we're trying to push boundaries. And I think people continue to hit us up about kind of what happens on the John front, because it's so noticeable, but whether it's him or whether it's everything, it's kind of continuing to do things that maybe just like haven't been done before or aren't the most expected routes, but it's continuing to push those because it's just what we believe in.
Yeah, I would say that. And, you know, just really being able to kind of grow and build upon the experience that, you know, we've had over the last 2 years. I mean, I think that we talked about it a lot in this conversation, but just the amount that Holt and I have been through, you know, over the last couple of years, sometimes we wake up and still feel like we don't know shit.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably more often that than, you know, the opposite. Yeah. So
we don't know a lot of shit.
Yeah. And I think, and I, you know what, it's funny. I think you talk to a lot of very experienced, not just managers, but people in music period. A lot of them will jokingly say the same thing. And, you know, I think a big reason of that is because we work in an industry that is constantly evolving and constantly changing. And I think that in today's landscape, there's a lot of reacting that's like being done as opposed to, being proactive, because a lot of it is just kind of seeing, you know, how certain things play out, how certain records, you know, develop on social media, for example. I mean, certain tracks can pop off on TikTok or Instagram Reels before it's even been released. Like that did not used to be a thing, you know? So I think, yeah, a lot of it is just us really leaning into our growth and, you know, getting comfortable with, you know, kind of where we're at, and while also not being complacent about it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, just what you said, you know, like it's the student's mindset. You know, as soon as you think you know something, then you're closed. You're off to learning more. You know, so exactly. you always got to be like, yeah, of course I don't know. You know, like in the grand scheme of knowledge, like, come on, man, nobody knows like anything. You know what I mean?
If you think you're the smartest person in a room, then you're actually the dumbest.
Absolutely. For sure.
That's a really important, you know, kind of thing to follow, because there's always something to learn, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was the end of the interview. Thank you guys again for your time.